this fucking guy.
We're doing it.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hi, Brett. Hi, Kayla.
Oh, I've missed your face.
I miss you too.
So as of recording this episode, we have not put out the episode we recorded before Thanksgiving.
We have not.
And that's on me. But
sometimes life is hard.
Look, I've had a lot of shit going on. I had to go to Mexico. It was a whole thing.
There was holidays.
There was a holiday. So, you know, just whatever. Fuck you guys. This is...
Enjoy the podcast that we do for free.
Yeah, this is free. And to keep it free for you...
Ayo,
we're just going to do this right at the top of the show.
Here it comes. I feel like we should... I mean, we kind of do. Just like, let's knock it out up
look,
front.
I'm not trying to mess around here.
If there's one thing you should know about us, we do not fuck around.
No, we don't fuck around. We have zero fun. We are 1,000% serious all the time. Just keeping it
serious.
Keeping it, what did we say? Keeping it 100.
We are keeping it 100. We are very dedicated to our craft. Oh no, I lost you.
Oh my God, I don't know what just happened. Everything just froze for like literally 5 seconds.
It's the spirits that you brought into the internet tubes.
I thought that we were done with the haunting.
I don't know. It seems not.
Well, that's just rude.
I know. It was just really rude of the internet to do that to us while we're asking for money.
I know. So if you would like to keep this podcast free... And to, I mean, we're going to keep doing this regardless.
Yeah.
Even though it costs us, what, $24 a month to host it, on top of our equipment, on top of our time. And like, you can give us, if 24 of you gave us $1 a month on Patreon at this fucking guy pod, then we would be able to host the show for free.
We would be so set.
And that would be great. Because, like, the equipment's bought.
Yeah. Because we, like you, are poor.
Yes. And, look, it's the holidays. This is all we want for Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, mm-hmm.
all
Festivus,
the things.
Whatever Satan Christmas is. Like, mm-hmm. we would like, as your gift to us...
Mm-hmm. And then you don't even have to wrap it.
No, you just boop it on the computer.
You just bibbity boop it up in there, and then it shoots onto us like magic.
Yeah, and then in return, our gift to you is being in your ear holes.
Yeah, continuation of wonderful quality content.
Quality
content.
That is our... number one priority here at this fucking guy incorporated.
We are three things. We do not fuck around. We keep it 100. We are dedicated to quality content. That is our mission statement, should you choose to accept it.
It all goes hand in hand in hand.
In hands.
Yeah. Hand.
Four hands?
Hand hugs.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, this is post Thanksgiving. So this episode is going to come out not this week, but next week, which is like,
there's going to be some stuff happening.
Yeah. Stuff is going to happen. As of right now, it's very cold in Atlanta and Carmen is dealing with like 15 fucking feet of snow.
Oh my God. So many snows in Colorado, you guys. Oh, so many. There's too many snows and too few degrees, and I don't like it.
Also, Carmen is so small.
It's
You're so
tiny.
Small. How can the snow is taller than you are.
I had to trudge through the snow the other day because I was forced to go into nature with my love and some wonderful sweet angel friends of ours who are tall people. They're very tall.
They're like giants.
Yeah. They're hitting six and above.
They're kind of like literal Viking people.
Yes. They are very very Nordic.
Yeah.
And they're gorgeous a people, and they're just like tromping through shit. No problemo. Me, I'm punching knee length holes in snow, and I hated everything about it.
You're like, what's it called? Like in the lawn when they drill the holes into the lawn?
That's exactly what I was just like. Poof, poof, poof. Oh, it was so much effort. I hated everything about it.
Snow, not awful.
It's not my habitat.
It's not anyone's really. Just leave it to the polar bears and the penguins, like narwhals. Everything else can fuck off.
No, I didn't enjoy it.
I'm really sorry that happened to you.
It's okay. I'm sorry that all of the cold blast that we had here came all the way to you.
It was pretty bad this morning, I'm not gonna lie. But that's okay because, you know, it warmed my heart. I need to talk about Baby Yoda for a second.
Oh, what an angel.
And for anyone who's going to be like, it's not actually Yoda. Yeah, I fucking know. But we don't know what Yoda is. So it is a baby-ish version of Yoda. Stop.
Save your comments for Reddit. We don't want them.
Yeah, just want to... If I knew more about Baby Yoda, I would do this fucking guy on Baby Yoda. Maybe I'll do one on Real Yoda one day. I don't know. But one, The Mandalorian is a great show, and I want all of the episodes right now. And Baby Yoda is, I would die for him. I love him so much.
I just need to see him holding more stuff.
The cup of soup.
Jesus H. Christ. I just want to see him hold different objects. Is that too much to ask?
That's it.
I just want a half hour Baby Yoda with tiny fat fingers holding different objects. That's all I want.
And then maybe levitating things with the force. Just like, that's it.
But he's not real good at levitation yet because he's still a baby. So it just kind of like hovers.
Oh, it just hovers. And then he gets so tired and sweepies. And then he has to take a nap.
He's just so weirdo.
I just love him so much.
Whoever pitched that in that writer's room deserves a Nobel Prize.
Yes, because I feel like it's united a lot of people.
It really has brought a lot of warring factions together.
Mm-hmm.
God damn it. Oh, he's so cute.
I read an article today about why is Baby Yoda so cute, and it talked about my favorite scientific thing of cuteness aggression.
We both have in spades.
If you don't know, cuteness aggression is when you see something so cute that you want to squeeze it to death.
You just want to destroy it because it's too good for this planet.
Or punch someone in the face.
Yes.
And it's a scientific thing because your brain, when it sees something real cute, releases the same chemicals that cause you to be violent and aggressive. And that, my friends, is cuteness aggression. And it's real. And you can look it up.
I constantly look at my dogs and go just like, I want to
eat. I just want to eat your face.
It's too much for my heart to handle. Baby Yoda causes a lot of the same reaction.
So much. And then I had double cuteness aggression because there was Baby Yoda. And then Sora, his ears got all flat like Baby Yoda. Oh. And he was watching Baby Yoda. And I was just like, I'm going to fucking scream. I couldn't handle it.
It's too much. Our human brains are not ready for that.
No, they're not.
It's the same. The reason that Baby Yoda is so cute is the same reason that puppies are cute.
Yes. Big floppy ears. Big old eyes.
Oh,
tiny big stupid head.
Oh,
with the big and the tiny hands.
You know how I feel about tiny hands.
And like a little pot belly.
Son of a bitch.
Just like a little one.
I don't know if we've talked about my love of animals, the tiny hands. I don't know if we want to get into it today.
Would adopt a raccoon.
I would adopt a family of raccoons and just feed them all blueberries.
And they
with their little fucking little hands. They would just eat them right up. They would take them from me.
Don't cry. We're only 10 minutes in. Jesus Christ.
But I think about Hannah Raccoon. A blueberry.
My favorite.
Those little hands.
My favorite is that gif or video of the raccoon that has cotton candy and puts it in water and it dissolves.
And it's so confused. It's
so confused and so upset.
Like, why did my cloud go away?
Right. My sweet cloud, where did it go?
God damn it.
Oh, so good.
Animals with tiny hands. Oh, I will stab somebody.
Yeah. God, remember that raccoon that climbed that building for like a whole day?
Oh, a real game changer.
We need another moment like that.
Mm-hmm. We need something like that to bring our country together.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like all root for an animal doing something weird and cool.
That's the thing. That's all I want. Do you want to tell me a story?
I do want to tell you a story. So this is connected to my recent holiday experience, which okay. is that I was invited by a friend's family who they are Pakistani, yes. To have Thanksgiving with them because they don't have any family in town. And they knew that my husband and I were staying down. So they invited us over and we're like, I hope it's cool with you that we hate Thanksgiving food and think it's gross. And we just cook our food. And we were like, fuck yes, that sounds amazing. Thanksgiving food is the worst. Agreed. It's not a real great representation of good food. So while at Pakistani Thanksgiving, my friend's husband was telling me about this tribe of people okay. called the Kalash. And I'm going to okay. tell you about the titan of the Kalash.
What?
Maureen Lyons, a.k.a. Bibido.
What?
Of the Kalash people.
I love this already.
Okay, so in the northwest region of Pakistan, it's like super, super rugged, lots of mountains. And we're not even talking like in Colorado, there's like 14ers. We're talking like crazy tall mountains, like 18 to 21,000 feet. Like that's, they're insane.
That's way too many feet.
Yeah, like there's not oxygen up there. It's wild. So there's a valley in that area of land in the Hindu Kush Mountains. And there's this tribe of people called the Kalash that lives there that is spelled K-A-L-A-S-H for those wanting to do your own research.
Okay.
And they are direct descendants of Alexander the Great and Alexander the Great's armies from when he conquered the Punjab region in 326 B.C. So Kermit, because this valley that
doesn't make sense as a date in my brain.
Okay. So because the valley is surrounded 360 by mountains and it's super, super rugged, it's really hard to get into. It's very remote. There's only one road in and it is literally off the side of a mountain with no guardrails because we're out in the fucking middle of nowhere.
This sounds like the plot of 300.
Yeah, it's wild. So they've been there in this valley for like ever, just kicking it. And they look like fucking white people. They're just white European people kicking it in the northwest of Pakistan for like centuries.
What?
Yeah. So they look very like, Eastern European.
Okay.
They are not Islamist. They are pagans in a majority Islamic country, and they like revere animals. They believe in fairies and they have like polytheistic beliefs. So they have like a culture that is basically completely untouched by Pakistani culture.
That's wild.
Yeah. So it's crazy. But now in like the last 50, 60 years, there's been a lot more awareness of them. So like peak tourists have been going there. Mm. And then like the area is becoming really sought after for like lumber and stuff. There's like deforestation is becoming an issue. And then like a lot of people are like moving out of the cities and stuff and coming into more rural areas. So there's a lot more threats to like their culture.
Yeah.
And so their culture probably would have been completely wiped out by now had it not been for one woman named Maureen Lines, known in the Kalash culture as Bibi Doe.
I already love her.
She is fucking amazing. So Maureen was born in 1936 in London to a, like a very middle-class family. Like her dad worked in like radar or something. And she was an only child. So like a motherfucking badass bitch left school at 16 and was like, I'm not doing this nonsense anymore. And went to like a technical school to learn shorthand and speech so that because she wanted to become a journalist.
Awesome.
So she ran away from home the next year when her mother left her father and was like, I'm done with this. Peace out. Bye. And moved to central London and found a job as a waitress at one of those new espresso bars.
Oh my God, stop.
I know. Can you imagine like 50s London, like coffee bars are
that
just
is a thing. So cute.
Goddamn adorable.
It's so posh.
She's so cool. So then after this, she spends a few years living in Paris. And then
of course.
I know. So goddamn cool. And then immigrates to the States in 1961. And she said of her just like bebopping around, quote, it was one of those impulses. I've lived my life on impulses. I was standing at a bus stop in the rain and I'd had a fight with my lover and I was out of work when I saw a sign advertising for domestics in America. 6 months later, I was on a ship to New York.
That's the best breakup story ever.
I know. It was just like, I'm going to leave. And not only am I going to leave, but I'm going to leave when it's like late, mid to late 50s. And I'm going to go live in Greenwich Village.
Oh my God.
So girl goes and lives in Greenwich Village with the beatniks.
What?
I know. She's amazing. She is amazing.
That's so unbelievable.
So she goes and kicks it in the village with the beatniks for a while and then ends up deciding to go back to school. So she goes to the new school. Because what else do you do when you're like creative and cool in the 50s and you're kicking it with the beatniks? You go to the new school. And then she decided just here again on a whim to transfer to NYU and switch. She had been studying like poetry and journalism at the new school and decided to switch to international affairs and Arabic.
Wow. Okay. So she realized her fine arts degree was not going to get her anywhere.
Unlike you and I.
Unlike us. She was
like, let me go do something
else. She made the right choice.
Good on you, baby girl.
My English lit major did nothing for me.
Oh, samesies. Paying off in dividends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dividends of debt.
Bow, bow, bow.
So a couple years later, it's 1964. She decides in a time where there is no way to set up travel, especially international travel, and be a woman by yourself.
Right.
She hitchhikes.
No.
From Turkey to Damascus.
No.
Honey. By herself.
Okay. I love her for that, but also girl.
And
no.
Said we had zero problems.
Nobody needs to be hitchhiking anywhere ever. My dad told me that he hitchhiked from New York to Maine one year when him and his friends just like decided they wanted to go see the Winter Olympics or some shit. So they just like hitchhiked. And he was like, yeah, it was super fun. It was like, no problem. And I was like, yes, because you are a white male.
Yep. Got that privilege. Yeah, no, but this bitch did it in the 60s.
Good for her.
And in the Middle East.
Also, how did you set up travel back then? You had to go to the airport and be like, let me see your ticket schedule.
I have no idea. The thought of trying to set up travel without the internet and I like it.
And that you had to get on those old ass planes.
Folks were smoking in them.
Ugh. Wearing weird pantsuits.
So, like, you had to be so
fancy. You had to dress up.
Wearing heels in the fucking airport. Can absolutely you imagine? No. Ew. No. Nobody's got time for that.
Whew. Okay, so she's in Damascus.
Yeah, so she's going across the Middle East, falls in love with the place, is like, this is the jam. I'm super into this. Glad I switched my major to international affairs and Arabic because this shit is the jam. So for the next few years, she continues to travel around and just kind of like bebop around the world like an amazing badass she is. So she lives on a Greek island for a while.
Oh,
she lives in Beirut for a hot minute. She sailed through the Persian Gulf and then continues to go to more parts of the Middle East. So she goes to Egypt, she goes to Jordan and the West Bank, and then she hits up India and China as well, because why not round
you're
it all out?
You're already there. Just
you're on know the continent, round it all out. So now we're going to fast forward a little bit to 1980 when she takes her first trip to Pakistan that would change her life forever.
Okay.
So she's traveling all around Pakistan, and she is taking a break one day and is trying to figure out how to get across this really fast moving stream. So she's just kind of standing there with some other like people who are on the trip and trying to figure out how to cross the stream. So a quote, tall, dignified woman wearing a veil, which was very unusual for the time because it wasn't all super strict law back then. Mm-hmm. So this woman comes over and shows her a place where she can cross. So, and on her way across, Maureen ends up slipping. And the woman is behind her and catches her and helps her back up. But as she did,
ladies helping ladies.
I know, fucking don't even speak the same language. It's like, bitch, I got you. So, but as she helped Maureen up, her veil came off of her face, and Maureen saw that she had a mass, a quote, mass of pink and black scabs.
Oh my God.
So a few days later, Maureen went to the nearest town, bought some medicine, and took them back to where she had met the woman to give them to her. So totally changes her life. So a year later, and she's like, I got to do something. Like, there's something fucked up going on here. I don't know what it is, but like, I got to do something. So a year later, she manages to secure a permit to stay a month in the Kailash Valley where she met this woman. So she goes back. She is adopted by a Kailash family.
Oh, my God. And how old is she at this point?
So let's see. This is the 80s. So she's like late 30s.
Okay.
So she's adopted by a Kailash family. And then the next year, she decides that she can't really help them without medical training. So she goes back to the States, to New York, to get her certification as a paramedic so that she can then go back to Pakistan and actually truly help out these people.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
What an angel.
Yeah. So she is like studying down, hitting those books, getting her certification. So she goes back and she becomes what they call a barefoot doctor. And
okay.
She's just hiking up and down the mountains, visiting, going village to village, seeing what people need, giving them medicine, giving them vaccines. And her nickname, Bibido, comes from the fact that she would collect dogs, because duh, why not?
Of course.
I know. Didn't she just get so much more awesome?
I already loved her, and now I'm like, yes, she's one of us.
Yes.
Amazing.
So she had like 2 to 4 dogs at all times, but her favorite dog she named Bibido, and she adopted him after his mama was killed by a wolf. And so all the kids in the villages would hear her going up and down the mountain going, Bibido, Bibido, like calling the dog.
Oh my God.
And so that's what they started to call her.
That is so cute.
So that became her nickname. Also, Maureen, probably not super easy for them to pronounce.
Right. something? Do we know if Bibbido, like, had a meaning?
I think that it does mean something. I did not look it up, though.
Okay.
I mean...
Well, it's cute, so...
I did consult several different articles. The majority of my information, I actually saved it because this article is amazing. It's called The Titan of the Kalash by Jonathan Foreman. It's on the Telegraph. Take a look at it. It's amazing. He really, like, he went to visit Maureen in 2007 and, like, talks about everything she was up to and her whole life. And, oh, it's fucking amazing article.
That's awesome.
Anyways, so it's now, like, the mid-80s. And Maureen is, you know, tramping around, giving everybody medicine, saving lives, being amazing. And she starts realizing, like, oh, like, these people don't have, like, some basic ass shit. Mm-hmm. So she starts fundraising for projects she wants to do. And she does it, God damn it, because she's a fucking angel. She does it through bake sales at her mother's home back in England in Buckinghamshire.
Stop it.
She starts raising money through bake sales.
Cutest thing I've ever heard.
No, she's amazing. But then, like, there's only so much money you can get from delicious British baked goods.
Right.
So she starts a couple of years later petitioning, like, governments and emissaries. And so she gets enough money by 1919. Christ almighty, I've gone backwards in time. 1990, that's different.
Wow.
To build the first latrines in the villages and bring them stoves, because the women would cook on open fires inside the house. And so they had all these crazy, like, eye and lung problems. And so she was like,
smoke.
So much smoke. And so she was like, we got to fucking get this thing under control. So that was her first project that she did along with help from the British High Commission in 1990, was helping them build latrines and get them stoves. And then she also built a dispensary where locals could come and get medicine if they needed it.
I love that.
I know. She's amazing. Also in 1990, I don't think I've properly, like, vomited up how much I love this woman and how
I love her. I want to hang out with her. We can't, but I want to.
So the same year that she did her first project in 1990, she also almost died. So she, if anybody was sick in the valley and needed to, like, get to a hospital, she was like, get in the fucking Land Cruiser, we're going. And would take them on this treacherous ass 11-mile road that was the only road in or out of the valley that connected to the nearest town, that, like I said, on a literal mountainside, it is barely wide enough for a car.
My palms are sweating.
All these hairpin turns. It's wild looking. Google it.
I can't. I can't look
so
at
she
that.
She was like, fucking get in the car, let's go. So it was on one of those trips. She had dropped someone off and was coming back that she was crossing a river and a flash flood happened and almost drowned her, but she was able to get out and she never wore a seatbelt after that.
Because you can't undo it when you're...
She can get out of it.
I mean, seatbelts are important.
Important for crossroads. She almost died in a flash flood.
Invest in a seatbelt cutter / car emergency kit to keep in your vehicle.
They actually do recommend that if you live in areas where there's flash floods, is to keep a knife in your car to cut your seatbelt.
Oh my God.
That's just scary.
That's really stressful and terrifying.
I know. She's amazing. And was like, first of all, volunteer to go. She's amazing. So in the, like, early mid-ish 90s, she starts spending a lot less time in the valley with, like, the Kalash people and spending a lot more time in Islamabad talking to diplomats and officials and trying to, like, inform them about the threats to the Kalash. Like, just fucking completely uncontrolled tourism, because this is before 9/11 when everybody freaked out about the fucking Middle East. So it's like completely unchecked tourism, like folks just like flooding the goddamn valley. And then there's what does she call them? The lumber mafia. So there's just people coming in and just fucking cutting down trees and like threatening her and all this wild shit. So she ends up starting a Pakistani-based NGO called the Kalash Environment Protection Society, and then a British charity to support that called the Hindu Kush Conservation Association in 1995, after like years of talking with all these diplomats and foreign officials and all this stuff and trying to get support together for it.
So she like loved these people and was like, I'm going to dedicate my life to helping them.
Yes, basically. She was like, this is my fucking calling. This is what I'm doing with my life. These people are being completely neglected. I'm going to handle some shit. So, and she had a personal secretary whose name was Yanis Khan. And he said, I know. I was like, it's very close to Jonas Konwald.
Yeah, it is.
Coincidence. For those of you who don't watch Dark, get on it.
Come and
on.
Time travel.
Ugh, thank you.
I mean,
ugh.
Could be the same.
It could. This could somehow tie into the third season of Dark. We don't know that it doesn't.
You're right.
So her personal secretary, Yanis Khan, said, quote, she once told me that she had realized during her first visit to Pakistan that the government was neglecting the Kalash. During my years with her, she spent all of her time planning the betterment of the community. Oh, I know. Angel. So her mother passes away in 2000. Mm-hmm. And so Maureen decides, like, you know what? I'm spending all my time in Pakistan anyways. So she just is like, done with England. Bye. I'm living full time in the Kalash Valley. She said, quote, I sold my house in London and completely moved to Pakistan. This is where my work is, where my adopted 60-member family in Kalash, and most of all of my heart is. Mm-hmm. She told the BBC in 2004.
Oh my God.
I know. She's amazing. And on top of this, during the entirety of her time in the valley helping the Kalash people, she was continually harassed.
Of course she was.
Of course, because A, you're a woman. God forbid you try to do anything as a woman, but also, like, there's a lot of corruption. So, like, the lumber mafia, people trying to move in and, like, build hotels and shit and, like, exploit the Kalash people. And then especially the police. But she was finally granted official Pakistani citizenship in 2004 for her over 20-year work with the Kalash people. And her projects over that time encompassed the latrines and the stove projects I told you about earlier. And then also, like, fighting tuberculosis, which was really bad in the area.
Wow.
Like, building freshwater systems and bridges.
Building literal bridges and bridging cultural gaps.
I know. She's amazing.
I love her.
In 2008, she was awarded Pakistani's highest civil honor, the Tamga-e-Imtiaz Award. She was also a prolific writer. She wrote 4 books on the Hindu Kush region and on the Kalash culture. So the first one that she wrote was in 1988, and the most recent one that she wrote was in 2003. And then she also had a book of photography that was published a few years before her death in 2017.
She only, like, died 2 years ago.
Yeah, only passed away 2 years ago. I was so sad to read that because I was like, yeah, she's amazing. And then I was like, oh, she passed away. That's a bummer. But so in 2012, she had begun a project to build a high school in one of the villages, and a few years later adopted several orphaned Kalash children. And she passed away on March 17th, 2017, after months of declining health. But in her passing, the Maureen Lines Foundation was established in late 2017 to carry on her legacy. And to ensure uninterrupted continuation of all of her projects, because when she passed away, everybody was like, oh, shit, nobody's going to give a fuck about these people anymore.
Right.
And to take care of all of her adopted children. And the best part of all of this is that in the article, the Telegraph article by Jonathan Froman from 2007, Maureen said, quote, people ask, what made you give up your life to do this? What is it that I've given up? I'm doing exactly what I want to do, and the whole way of life here has given me so much. I've had a very rich life.
She's amazing.
Samorian Lines, fucking badass woman of the Kalash people, just out there doing her thing, being amazing.
That is such a great story, and I'm mad that more people don't know about her.
I know.
And this amazing culture.
No one knows who this is. I mean, God, barely anybody knows about the Kalash people. Anyways, I just learned about them the other day. And then especially even less people are going to know who Maureen Lyons Bebedeau is, because she's fucking amazing and the world needs to know.
Well, I feel like I need to go into that rabbit hole of learning more about her.
Oh, you will. It's a definite rabbit hole, especially when you get into like the geography of the land. You can see why these people, like these very like European people, settled there back in the day, because it just straight up looks like Switzerland.
And probably because they were like, well, we're here now, so
yeah,
I don't want to go back on that crazy road.
Yeah, I'm not gonna, I don't really want to get back out there with that that army. So this valley seems nice.
This is nice.
This is cool. We can kick it here. They got stuff. Yeah.
We can build stuff.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Enjoy the Google rabbit hole that I just put all of you on with the Kalash people, and more importantly, Maureen Lyons.
I like that you said Bebedeau a couple seconds ago, like you were Moira from Schitt's Creek.
Bebe.
The Bebedeau.
Bebe. It's Bibidoe. So I'm just like,
literally, Bibidoe.
Yeah.
I love that. So cute. I know.
She's a fucking badass, guys.
I like that you always tell me, like, positive stories of people.
I try to. We're in dark times, everyone.
I know. We are. We are. And that doesn't look, that was not me being like, and I have a bummer for you.
I really thought that was the segue. Was, and it's time for Carmen Sadness Hour. Brought to you by Caitlin Corsetti.
# Carmen Sadness Hour. I love that.
Carmen gets real sad and has zero fun comebacks.
No, this one's funny.
Yay!
And stupid.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's real stupid. So today I'm going to tell you about Lord Timothy Dexter, who was not an actual lord and who is most well known for faking his own death to see how many people would come to his funeral.
I am so down with Timothy already. I'm here for this.
He's an absurd person. So, Timothy Dexter was born on January 22nd, 1747, in Malden, Massachusetts, which was like British America at the time, because this is like...
Oh my God, yeah, wasn't it?
Yeah, so this is like Declaration of Independence?
Revolution?
Yeah.
That was that, right?
Yeah.
Oh, God damn it. We're going to sound so stupid.
I know. But look, the last time I took actual history was like 15 fucking years ago. And I also like, all they teach us about American history is like, what's his face with the lanterns, one by sea, two by land. What?
John, don't even know what you're talking
Paul
about.
Paul Revere.
Okay.
Right? Is that right?
I don't know.
In my head, I was like, that sounds right. But then I was like, or was that Paul Bunyan with the ox and the axe thing? I'm going to edit this out.
No, keep it in. Keep it in. The people need to know. The people need to know. I was thinking earlier.
The American school system does not properly teach us history.
No, it doesn't. Yet I can tell you every word to the Cobra Kai chant from Karate Kid.
She can, and it's amazing.
Strike first, strike hard, no mercy, sir. Thank you. I can't tell you shit about the American Revolution, but I could tell you that, goddammit.
I mean, honestly, that information you just provided was way better.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're in, like, pre-America America. So he went to school for like a hot second, and then at the age of 8 starts working as a farm laborer. Ooh. Because there were no child labor laws. And so like, if you're a little toddler, you can just go out into the fields and do stuff.
There's like, here's some weapons, little child. Go here, cut some things.
Take this scythe and go chop some wood, like Tyrell Wellick.
Keep all your limbs, maybe.
Good luck. Also, like, you don't have sunscreen. You don't have, like, work boots. They're just, like, they're just...
There's so many hazards.
I mean, look, that's... farming, for anyone farming anything, that's hard.
Yeah.
But a literal child.
Also, like, the infant mortality rate was so high. You'd think they'd be so stoked on little kids that they would not have just handed them weapons.
Right. But... I mean, I guess that's what happened. So then he's 16 and he became an apprentice to a leather dresser.
Wow.
So now I was thinking about this because I was like, that sucks. And when I was 16, I was like boop bopping around in my little Xterra, just got my driver's license, going to cheerleading practice, like, and he's just learning how to do a craft, like make leather goods with his hands.
Yeah. I worked, like, at a pizza place and this man learned how to tan leather.
Yeah.
200 years of progress, baby.
We're doing it right.
We're really doing it.
So he's like doing pretty well as an apprentice. And I guess he, like, do you graduate from an apprenticeship?
Sure.
You like move along.
Yeah, so, promoted.
Yeah. So he was like done with his apprenticeship and his master or like is that what they're called?
Yes.
I don't know. And this is also like slave time, so I don't want to say anything like fucked up.
Yeah. But no, there's like a master bricklayer would be somebody, right, who was like fucking like the jam.
Yeah. Right. And then like an apprentice.
Right.
Right. Okay. So whatever.
The guy after Leatherman.
The Leatherman. like the worst movie ever. The Leatherman. And you know that's going to be turned into like a book and one of those, like, you know those book. Didn't we talk about this? Like the Blank's daughter. Like the Leatherman's daughter.
You know it. You know there's the Leatherman's daughter out there somewhere.
If not, we have to write it now. It's just another book.
Got another one of her projects. So busy.
So busy. Okay, so he's done with his apprenticeship. And I guess when you are done with it, like, it's custom for the person teaching you to, like, give you a freeman suit, which I guess, like, you're supposed to wear to interviews or, like, be professional.
That sounds good to me.
They just give you a suit, which is...
That seems pretty legit.
Pretty nice. But I'm like, I'd rather have monies, please.
Yeah, but you had to think, like, you know, they had to, like, make all this shit by hand. Like, basically, yeah, everything was custom back then.
But he could already make his own shit because he learned how to make his own shit.
He could have made a real sick leather suit.
A leather suit. Oh, my God.
Head to toe. So awesome. Hot.
Silence of the Lambs, like, just a skin suit.
Just so hot and sweaty.
Makes me think of that episode of Friends where Ross gets stuck in the leather pants. The baby powder, and it makes like a paste.
Oh, so good. Yes. That would have been Lord Timothy's. Lord Timothy's leather suit. Lord
Timothy.
Come down to the finest leather suit store this side of the Mississippi.
But also, we're like kind of in Boston, so you got to do like a Boston accent.
Come down to the suit.
But I don't know what that was. No.
I lost it as soon as I started.
I can't do Boston. I just can't.
I can only do the word Boston.
Or like open the car door.
Yeah.
You know?
See the car to have it. Yeah. That's the best I can like, do.
Wicked.
Yeah. Wicked smart. You're wicked pisser.
Wicked smart. My friend lives in Boston. It's fine.
It's okay. It's okay.
So he gets this suit and he's like, oh, thanks for the suit, and sells it because he's like, I need money. And then he's like, I'm going to start my own leather business.
Damn.
But then also pretty ballsy to be like, you just graduate from your apprenticeship and then you're going to make a competing leather business.
I kind of like it.
So, but then that whole Boston Tea Party thing happened.
Oh yeah.
Where like the British were doing taxation without representation, and then the people dumped the tea into the harbor, and then like business was bad.
Yeah.
So he's like, okay, I'm out of here, and packs a little stick with a little hobo stick with a satchel, and he walks to a new town.
Wait. That's so wild to me that you could just do that in old times.
And I don't know how far it was, but I feel like anywhere, because this wasn't, nothing was like completely settled. So it was, he just like walked and like went to a place called Charlestown, not Charleston, Charlestown.
He just I'm going to take the road, the one road.
And apparently this was Boston's quote, leather epicenter, which I don't think was an actual thing, but I don't know because I'm not from the 1700s.
Oh, that also makes me throw up.
I know, it's gross. I just imagine everything is leather.
Have you ever seen, this is a real obscure reference, have you ever seen the movie Perfume?
Yes.
And like there's that whole part where he's like working as a child in a leather tannery, and it is the fucking most disgusting, upsetting scene.
It is so gross.
Oh, that's just all I see in my head as you're talking about this, is just that scene from that movie. Because it was so upsetting.
Oh. Yeah, I'm not happy with that image. So now he's in Charlestown and he's like trying to make it with his little leather startup. And he meets a woman named Elizabeth Frothingham.
Oh, love it.
Who was married to one of Timothy's old leather associates. And
the phrase leather associates just made me so happy. I'm sounds sorry.
Like a really bad lawyer, like Timothy Leather and Associates.
Leatherman and Leather Associates at your service.
So Elizabeth, I guess the guy that she married, who was Timothy's old leather associate, died. So she's the article I read said a freshly minted widow. And I was like, that's not the proper term.
No.
Like her husband died.
She's not stoked on it, probably. No.
Well, I don't know. Anyway, she was super rich after inheriting her husband's monies. And so somehow Timothy, with like, I don't know, his traveling leather business and like literally nothing else to his name, somehow gets him to agree, or gets her to agree to marry him. So she's like, yep, I'll marry you. And she had a son from her marriage. And he's like, great, I'm moving in and I'm setting up my leather shop in the basement.
I appreciate Timothy's tenacity.
Look, just he's hustling.
He's hustling for that Skrilla.
Yeah. So he's just trying to become a businessman. But people at this time would not accept him as a business person because, one, he didn't have a formal education, and two, he married into money and didn't have that old money. And so everyone was all like noses up in the air, like, no, we don't like you, blah, blah, blah. So he kept trying to fit in here and like bought this big old house, and he was like desperate for acceptance. He was like neighbors with John Hancock, like the John Hancock.
Damn.
That signed the Declaration of Independence. And a very, very wealthy Bostonian man named Thomas Russell. And he was so desperate for acceptance that he tried to get into public office, but nobody would let him have a position. Until he submitted so many petitions that they created a fake position for him in Malden. So at this point, they're back in like the Malden area. Mm-hmm. As, quote, the informer of deer to keep track of the fawn population.
Oh, this is just great from both sides. Yeah. This is just this is a so great petty. Compromise.
So petty. Okay, but according to government records, the last deer disappeared from the Malden woods 19 years before the position was created for him.
Oh, that's shady.
So he's out there trying to track the deer population, and there's literally no deer.
Oh, damn, that's some shady shit, mm-hmm. y'all.
I know. So petty. So petty. So he's like working on his leather business. He's like making pretty good money. And then at towards the end of the Revolutionary War, he bought a ton of depreciated continental currency. And everyone was like, you're a fucking idiot because that's worthless. Like, that's like the war is not gonna, like, it's not gonna mean anything. Mm-hmm. But then the US government actually did something good and like paid people real US monies for whatever continental currency they had.
What?
And so it was something ridiculous, like 55 US dollars per like continental currency. So he got like rich as fuck.
Damn.
And he was like sick of these people's attitudes in town. And he's like, you know what? We're going to Newburyport, back to like that area. And at this point, Newburyport had kind of like evolved a little bit. And so, quote, the rich and poor mingled in this place.
So progressive.
I know. So with all of this money, he's like, you know what? I need a massive mansion that overlooks the sea. This is how I'm going to get everybody to accept me.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Mm-hmm, this house included a, quote, tasteful and commodious outhouses.
Ooh.
40 statues that depicted famous Americans.
And did he even have those places?
So a 19th century historian said, quote, the tasteless owner in his rage for notoriety created rows of columns 15 feet high at least on which to place colossal statues carved in wood directly in front of the door of the house. On a Roman arch of great beauty and taste stood General Washington in his military garb. On his left was Jefferson, on his right Adams. On the columns in the garden, there were figures of Indian chiefs, military generals, philosophers, politicians, statesmen, and the goddess of fame and liberty.
Wow. So that's thirsty.
Thirsty. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But of course, no estate is complete, Carmen, without a statue of yourself.
Yes. A statue or a massive oil painting.
Correct, which he probably also had.
Oh, totally. So
he included this statue of himself amongst his collection of famous Americans with an inscription that said, I am the first in the East, the first in the West, and the greatest philosopher in the Western world. And everyone was like, Bishop, I have
questions.
Like, you are not the first in the East or the first in the West, and you are also not a philosopher, sir.
Yeah, I've got a lot of follow-up questions for Timothy.
And I don't have answers.
That there are none. Did he just mean in the East and the West of his house?
Sure, maybe.
Okay.
He didn't specify. So, no, he was not a philosopher, but he also wasn't a lord, which around this time he started going by Lord Timothy Dexter. And everyone was like, and he just kept forcing people to like accept him and accept his like wealth and status, even though like he didn't actually have any status.
God bless him.
Money does not do everything, people. So he started hiring people to like appease him, basically, as you do when you have lots of money.
Sure, you hire an entourage.
Yeah. So he hired this woman named Madam Hooper, who was a rich local widow turned fortune teller, who gave him astrology advice, which you need. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I guess at the time you couldn't like go look up your horoscope online. So
yeah, sure.
You didn't have, and I'm like, sure one of those that apps.
It was very, biased.
Yeah. It was definitely like about him. And then he really wanted to imitate the King of England. So he hired his own poet laureate, and, he had found out that like the great Italian poets had crowns of mistletoe. So he gave this poet that he hired, who was just like some random dude that he found like in the market, he made him a crown of parsley.
What?
And then made him write poems and like recite them just to like make him feel better about himself.
That's incredible. Also, like, you were talking like post-revolution. Wouldn't like fashioning yourself after the deposed monarch not be soups cool?
And like in Boston?
Yeah, like.
Yeah. So it's
questionable.
So apparently he would like, when he would go into town, he would like stop strangers and be like, do you know of the greatest man in the East? Like hoping that they would say him, but like, obviously they didn't.
Because why would they?
Right. Because like, he's literally not done anything.
Yeah. Like note. The internet doesn't exist yet. We don't know you, bro. We don't
Twitter. Like you haven't gone viral. Like people don't know you.
Yeah.
So then our boy Timothy gets into some ship. And yeah, I said ship because he literally bought a fleet of ships and decides to get into the exporting business. So because everybody hated him so much, this is kind of like Mean Girls. Like all the other businessmen would like gang up on him, and they were like really mean to him and would make fun of him, and they would give him like purposefully bad business advice and then like make fun of his business decisions. And like one time, so he's like, I'm gonna send warming pans to the West Indies. Not the best idea because it's a tropical area, and like you don't need warming pans with coals to put in. That's like what they would put in beds to like keep your bed warm.
It's hot there,
right? But they were sold as ladles for the booming molasses industry. Genius.
So he like ended up just making money anyway.
Yes. And so people were like, how do you keep making money like despite all of the bad business ideas we give you? So trade was like booming out of the West Indies at the time. He sent mittens, which again they were like, yeah, you idiot, like that's a tropical area, but they were bought by Asian merchants to export to Siberia where it's cold and you need mittens.
What the fuck?
Some of his other weird but successful exports include coals, which he exported during a miner's strike. So there was like a massive premium on coals. Gloves, which he only traded because some guys were making fun of him and were like, you'd make more money shipping gloves. And then like he did and made like tons of money shipping gloves.
What is this person?
Bibles, which there were just happened to be a bunch of missionaries that needed some Bibles in the West Indies, and stray cats. He exported stray cats where all these like people who owned like warehouses and stuff in the Caribbean, they were like, oh, we need cats to keep the rats away.
I don't understand this man's life.
He was making so much money on accident, pretty much.
He was just like, I have a thing.
Yeah.
And then someone else was like, I have monies for that.
Yep. It just kept happening. It's truly the Elon Musk of his time.
Just really just tripping all over himself into money. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But because he was so focused on status and being popular, his family relationships just like plummeted. Visitors would ask where his wife and kids were, and he'd be like, oh, my wife died, and that woman you saw was a ghost.
Wow, that's fucking cold.
Like, she was very much alive and, like, in the house.
She's just, like, in the pantry, like, making a sandwich.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, the ghost.
Oh, my God.
So,
you didn't tell me that this house that I just built was haunted?
Yes. Oh, the statues. Okay, so then this is where this fucking guy goes just, like, off the deep end. So he was so obsessed with the status that he's like, you know what? I want to know what would happen if I died. So he fakes his own death. This is, like, an elaborate plan. He had a coffin made that he slept in for weeks.
Why was that part of the plan necessary? Okay,
because he held this lavish funeral with, like, wine and liquor and food, and it was the wake. So he was in this casket, literally observing people observe him as he faked his own death. 3,000 people attended. And then he apparently a few people were, like, in on it. And one of those was allegedly his wife. And she was supposed to, like, act upset and, like, cry, but he didn't see her cry. So, like, I guess at some point he got out of the coffin and was, like, back in the kitchen, and he, like, beat her with a cane. And then, like, people heard the commotion and then, like, found out that he wasn't actually dead. And he was like, ha, I'm alive, but, like, thanks for coming to my funeral. And everyone was like, you need to just stop. Like, you're fucking crazy.
Wow.
So he decides, so he's still, like, got his trade shit, but he's like, you know what? Even though I've never written and I don't know what I'm doing, I'm going to become a writer. I want to be the next Shakespeare.
Well, I mean, he's got a head for philosophy, so why not?
Right. He's the greatest philosopher of the West.
Yeah.
So he writes a book and publishes it at the age of 50. And it's called A Pickle for Knowing Ones, or Plain Truths in a Homespun Dress. Now, Carmen, this had over 8,000 words and no punctuation.
Oh, holy hell.
He published a book that had no punctuation, and no one would buy it because it also didn't make any sense and it wasn't about anything. And he started handing it out for free. And then people were complaining about it because it was a shitty book that had no punctuation or complete sentences, was spelled wrong, didn't mean anything. So he then releases a second edition with extra pages that were just punctuation marks so that the readers could distribute them at their own will.
So first the book is just the ramblings of a madman.
Yum.
And then he's angry that people are not reading the ramblings of a madman.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, let me enhance my ramblings.
Yes. I'm just going to give you several pages of just punctuation. And you know what? You can figure it out. You decide where they go.
Choose your own adventure on this punctuation.
Yep. Yep. And then shortly after he published the book, just a few years later, he quietly died at home. But this time he was, like, actually dead.
Do we know that for realties?
I mean, we don't.
Did he beat someone that day as well?
Maybe he did. It's unclear.
He did it quieter this time.
Maybe. He didn't, like, stage an elaborate funeral this time. So now his house in Newburyport eventually, like, became a hotel. And then most of the statues, because they were made of wood, were ruined. And the book is his most famous thing about him, his book and the fake death.
I feel like I need to read this book.
I know. I kind of want to get it. Should we get it? We should get it.
Yes, we should definitely get it and put pieces up on Instagram.
Yes.
Ooh, as, like, should, Wednesday wisdom.
We should decide where the punctuation goes.
Yes. We will etch in We'll draw in the punctuation, and it'll be like, Wednesday Wisdom. Hey, sometimes you pay a nickel for a lion.
Sure.
It'll be great.
Yep. And that was Timothy. Oh, classic Timothy.
Good. Oh, damn. Poor Timothy. What a scoundrel. What a rascal.
Such a weirdo.
What just a little rascal.
Yep. So that's that on that.
I mean, that's like a special level of insanity that only a rich white dude could get to.
Yeah. And I mean, he started out like kind of noble, like, okay, I just want to succeed and like do well in my life. And then he just got a big ego and.
Yeah. Like, I just want to make some leather goods.
Right.
Yeah. And then just got straight up crazy.
You got to watch out for your ego. Just don't let it go to your head.
This is the second time Elon Musk has come up today, but it's just like, hey, he started out with a good mission. I'm going to make electric cars. And now we have Cybertruck. And that doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Yeah, that whole thing is a disaster.
Oh.
And hilarious. That
presentation was amazing.
The best part is when he goes, oh my fucking God.
Yeah, he's a multi-episode series of this fucking guy.
Yeah, we should cover him. Sora, stop.
What a special individual. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good times.
So that's that. Have you had any interesting, weird, strange, fun encounters?
I don't think, oh no, I have. Oh my God. I can't believe I forgot about this. I was going to tell the story about my dog running after a coyote. Which that did happen. It ended
fine. It did happen.
Everything was okay.
Everything's fine.
But I'm going to tell you about the strange little fellow at the climbing gym who I think is in love with me, despite the fact that I go to the climbing gym with my husband.
Yes.
So after all of the snow came, which was a terrible day.
Right.
Once that died down and we were able to travel around in our cars again, once snowplows came, we were going stir crazy. And so we went to the climbing gym. And of course, everyone else had the same idea. So climbing gym, fucking packed. All these motherfuckers I've never seen before in my life. One of them, the sweet, bespectacled angel, who for some reason saw my face and went, her eyes are filled with kindness, and decided to just follow us around, only talking to me. Also, my husband is literally standing right next to me, / I'm on a wall climbing.
Right. And even if Kyle wasn't there, do not follow women or anyone around to talk to them when they don't want to speak to you.
No. So climbers have dumb words. I've told you this before. They have their own words for things that already exist.
Correct.
Like the way that you do a route is called the beta. That's, you could just call it the way you do a route. Like a sequence. That's a word that already exists.
And like beta means a different thing in a different context. That's very confusing.
It's all dumb. Climbers have dumb words for dumb things. Sorry, climbers, you do. Your words are fucking stupid, and I refuse to use them. However, I was having trouble with a very hard route that I was climbing. It was a 511B for my sweet climber friends out there. It was real fucking hard. And so I couldn't figure out this one move. Also, I'm a tiny person. Most route setters are average height, so I have to take one move and turn it into two. It's very hard, especially when there's very limited holds. So I'm like climbing, I can't figure it out. So I'm getting stuck. So I'm like looking down to Kyle and I'm like, do you have any ideas of like what I can do here? And so he's trying to help me, but obviously he's not on the wall, so he can't see the same shit that I can see. And this little fellow decides to run up from fucking nowhere and start telling me how to do this sequence that I'm not
going.
I thought he was joking, and so I started making up words to describe the moves. Like, yeah, you do TikTok to the back switch, and
I'm like,
this is fucking stupid. And it wasn't that, so then it was just weird. And then I decide I can't finish the fucking route, and I'm tired of it. And he's still there. So I come down off the wall and he's still there. And we keep moving routes. And here he'll fucking cut. Here he comes.
Oh, no.
And then we start climbing on the big wall that's at our gym, which is like super long routes. They're like 50 feet long. They're crazy. And so I go up one and then I come down and then Kyle goes looking for one. And there's people on the route that he wants to do. So we just sit down, take a breather. Here comes my little buddy. Oh, here he comes. And he's got those like, thick Coke bottle glasses. So the eyes are really magnified.
Really big.
Real big, real intense. And he proceeds to tell me about a route that's on the large wall that's a 514, which is literally like pro climbers right. do that.
That's...
And he was trying to tell me about the start moves as if I would even ever conceive of trying a 514. That's insane. But I think he wanted to like prove to me that he could do it. Like, sure. And I was like, clearly you can't. You've just been following us. I haven't seen you get on a climb the whole time I've been
here. That's so awkward.
So awkward. So yeah, now I am very wary of the next time I go to the climbing gym.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was just like, there is clearly a man right next to me. We are clearly like
together.
I'm calling him like honey and babe and stuff like that.
Right. And you know, you're married.
Yeah, married. So sorry, yeah, bro. That was my fun encounter.
I will follow that up with, so I went to Mexico with our sweet baby Amber. It was her 30th birthday. Happy birthday to my boo thing. There were four of us that went to Mexico to this like all-inclusive resort, which we all thought was going to be like relaxing, and it was kind of, but then it was also like a party resort with like theme parties and dancers and casino nights and all this kind of stuff. And I met a Russian man who just decided I was, you know, the love of his life.
I mean, you're a beautiful lady.
Thank you.
I can't deny that, but you also have a quite large, very shiny,
very shiny ring. And I was like, oh, I'm married. I'm sorry. Also, you're like ancient. He was very old. He was really sweet. And he was like, no, I'm not, you know, I'm not going to step on your husband's toes. And I was like, but you literally are.
That's literally what you're supposing.
Mm-hmm. And then he was like, no, I just want to set my friend up with your friend. And I was like, I was like, we're like all kind of like we're just not about that, because his friend was also very old and it was very uncomfortable. But I took a selfie with him just to make him feel better, which was nice of me. And there was
would not have done that.
Yeah. I mean, granted, I had about like 3-4 glasses of champagne at that point.
Sure.
Whatever. And then there was also this male dancer at the pool who fell in love with Amber, who had a reverse tramp stamp. And it was hilarious. That's a tramp stamp, right? Just right above the dick, just on the front. So same spot, just on the front.
Just like a nice doormat to the dick,
I guess. Yeah, it was like a little tribal, just right above. Mm-hmm.
It's tribal for micro penis.
No, because we could see what was happening down there through his little tiny shorts.
Oh, he had tiny shorts on.
He did a lot of thrusting. And just the same dance move over and over, just like lots of thrust. And there was foam from the pool. There was a foam party at the pool. It was intense. It was not a spa relaxed vacation. It was a crazy town. It was very fun, but don't need to do that again.
No, that sounds horrific. I would have turned around and left.
Yeah. So that was that.
Yeah, that's fun. Fun unwanted male attention week. Yay!
Don't be like those fucking guys if you're a guy.
Yeah.
Or a lady. You know what? Just don't harass people.
Yeah, don't harass people who clearly aren't into it.
Or just at all. Just don't.
Yeah, just don't at all.
Follow us on the social meds.
Do them social meds, guys. Sorry we were gone for a minute, but we back. Yeah,
we back now. We're gonna
be back. We good.
We're gonna get back into things. And until next time.
Be your own fucking guy.
Be your own fucking guy.
Bye.
Bye.